This feature of the Science News Radio Network is coming to you from our studios in Dallas, Texas. Science News is on the air right now.
This is the promise of tomorrow, where people and industry keep up with the business of emerging and nanotechnologies. The fields covered in this series of programs will include energy, defense, aerospace, medicine, semiconductors, and more. For the next hour, Colonel Mason will introduce his experts, and you'll be on the cutting edge of the promise of tomorrow.
Once again, welcome back. So good to be with you again as we explore the exciting world of the business of emerging science, open innovation. Today, the Internet of Things, yes. And of course, we're going to visit the Den of Strangers, get more wisdom from somebody a lot of us never heard of, visit our fountain of useless information we have in the second half hour, and of course, at the end of the program, listener comments, and the voice of reason. In just a minute, we're going to hear from Kurt Kelly. Kurt Kelly is a technology consultant. He's also making a presentation at the MetroCon conference, October 26th, and he's going to be telling about the Internet of Things. Technology consultant, and he will talk about how blockchain is changing IoT, and he's going to give us a preview of that here in just a minute. So we've got a lot of things cooking. We're so glad that you're aboard. I hope you'll go to our website and check out MetroCon at promiseoftomorrow.biz. You will see a link. If you've just tuned in, you're listening to the Science News Radio Network special presentation, Promise of Tomorrow with Colonel Mason. Those of you listening on radio can also hear us commercial-free online anytime, webcast at promiseoftomorrow.biz. Okay, we're going to go to the phones. We have with us Kurt Kelly. He's a technology and business consultant in the DFW area. He's going to be speaking at the MetroCon conference going on the 26th of October. If you want to know more about that, go to our website, promiseoftomorrow.biz. On the right-hand side of your screen, you'll see a link to MetroCon. We'll tell you all about the great things that are going on there. Really exciting. This is the 30th year for MetroCon. And Kurt is going to be presenting. And MetroCon is all about the Internet of Things this year. And we're really excited about this. And Kurt has got something to tell us about blockchain. It's changing the Internet of Things, and I'm totally in the dark over this, so maybe Kurt can fill us in. Welcome to the program, Kurt.
Oh, thank you, Colonel Mason. It's an honor to be here.
Now then, blockchain, what does this have to do with the Internet of Things?
That's a great question, because most people don't think of blockchain. They typically default to the thought of Bitcoin or Ethereum. So blockchain is actually the network behind the scenes that is what Bitcoin and Ethereum and all the other cryptocurrencies make transactions on today. So we're seeing a migration, because at first we used it as just a method of payment, and now we're using it as a method of transport. And so these particular networks that are set up, the main benefit behind them and really where it's changing the IoT sector is with the cryptography. So it's allowing for us for the first time to have military level security of the data that is actually stored on the blockchain, and it's doing so with hashing. So it's literally, I don't want to say impossible, but it's not ever been done to date to where these hashes have been able to be cracked. And so the information that's stored on these blockchains is just extremely secure. You know, and then also the you know, like I've mentioned, Bitcoin and Ethereum as well. So inherently in these networks, there's tokens that get passed back and forth. And those tokens can also be monetized, you know, to the shareholders of people that want to invest in the networks themselves, as well as the applications. So it's kind of interesting. You know, and the other thing that I would say is a huge benefit as well, and how it's kind of changing the space, is we're also allowing parties for the first time, you know, really to conduct business in a trustless manner. And this is done with the use of smart contracts. So if you want to think of it as, you know, a sensor being a person and walking up to another person and handing them a $20 bill, one person doesn't have to know anything about the other to receive the $20 bill. They just it's just a transaction that's conducted between two parties. Mm-hmm. And so in this manner, there's a lot of boundaries that can be put in place with smart contracts as well.
Okay, I'm going to try to digest all this. We're relating right now to Bitcoin and the security that's involved with moving Bitcoin. Apparently, there was a lot of thought put into it, and that was the blockchain safety mechanisms, if I'm using the right terminology here, to protect hackers from getting in and stealing Bitcoin or redirecting it or something of that nature. And what you're saying is that that whole process can be used with the entire IoT, Internet of Things, programs, no matter how they're put in, so that our self-driving cars and other things like that are going to be more difficult to be hacked by terrorists and have airplane crashes and car crashes and other things like that. Am I kind of summarizing that? Is that what we're talking about?
You're getting there. So just a little distinction, because there's been some news in recent times that we've seen where different people have lost Bitcoin during transactions. So just to be clear, the information on the blockchain itself is the piece that's encrypted with cryptography. And so that particular data that's stored on the chain, you're absolutely correct. That has never been able to be touched in any shape, form, or fashion. On the flip side, we still have the inherent security risks that go with applications. So if you have a device that has, some kind of a spyware, malware type of a, rogue installation of software, there is still the opportunity for them to capture data during a transaction, which is where the weakness is really right now with conducting payments. So, like at the wallets, for an example, or even the exchanges most recently that we've come to understand about. So any of the hacks that we've seen so far, just keep in mind that that's the actual application layer, which we're obviously still always learning how to build a better application. So the good thing is that the data itself is still secure, and application security, we're making progress.
Well, this leads me to another question too. There have been friends of mine who've said that they can't trust PayPal because they're afraid that their payments and their bank accounts and those sorts of things are going to be insecure. And I've got to admit that I've sort of avoided it myself, although people have offered to pay me using that method. But is PayPal using this blockchain technology too to protect them? Can you say?
They're not today. Now, it's hard to say what they're going to do in the future. We are seeing a lot of existing networks that are transitioning over to a blockchain type technology. So it's kind of hard to say where they're going to go in the future. But I can tell you that the financial sector, or we call it fintech, financial technology. So that particular it's its own ecosystem within I would say hard to say IoT at that point, but within the segment of blockchain use cases. So we are seeing a lot of these very well known platforms that are working towards that more secure transactions. If PayPal specifically is going to go that route, it hasn't been mentioned to date, but I can tell you that there's banks that are making transactions right now on test networks. They're happy with the results they're seeing, and even most recently there were two banks down in New Zealand that did a property contract transaction to where the customer information was transacted through the blockchain between two different banks to own property.
Well, Kurt, pardon me for the really elementary dumb questions, but who owns blockchain? And I guess it's an application, and I guess you purchase it from the people that devise the blockchain, or is blockchain a generic term for any number of different security tools? Or tell me a little bit about it.
Sure, that's a good question, actually, and so it can be looked at in a couple of different ways. Blockchain, in and of itself, the technology is not owned by anybody. There was actually Satoshi Yakamoto back in the 2008-2009 time frame, which is actually a fictitious character, is who released the information to the white paper to a cryptography group, which kind of took it and ran with it for implementation. So the actual technology itself is not owned by anyone, but anybody can own a network. So in other words, if you wanted to put up a network tomorrow as a private network, you could do so, or you could ride on one of the existing public networks. And so that data can transact across, which is the reason why we're seeing a lot of the altcoins, if you will. So those are coins that have been created to ride on an existing network. So Ethereum is the one that's really making a lot of noise right now, as the network of choice. And you see all kinds of different altcoins that are being, you know, developed on a day-to-day basis. The good thing is that there are standards for how to create a coin or a token, if you will. So there are standards that you have to follow in order to utilize these networks. So it makes it more interchangeable between companies.
Well, I know that when Bitcoin was first suggested and was launched onto the public, there were an awful lot of people say, this isn't going to fly. Who's going to do this? Fictitious money. It isn't going to work. But it stuck around for a bit. Have you had personal experience with Bitcoin? Have you been able to use it yourself?
So I've surrounded myself with a lot of people that have. To me, I'm more on the technology side than I am the application side. And so on the blockchain side of things, I'm actually involved with several companies that are developing blockchain applications for being able to store data, specifically in the IoT space, and being able to store the information coming from sensors. But as far as the actual currencies themselves, it's like playing in the stock market, and there's times to do it, and there's times not to do it. And truthfully, I'm not a finance guy, and so I kind of shy away from the investment side on the cryptocurrency piece of it.
Okay, well, let's move another direction then. Understand that a couple of transportation specialists from the city of Arlington are going to be making a presentation. They've got a self-driving shuttle that they're introducing the end of August, and of course that will be well in operation by October 26 when the Metricon conference opens up. And that always begs the question when we talk about these self-driving cars and other things like that. I mean, is this sort of a blockchain tool that you're talking about, will that protect these self-driving vehicles from being hacked and somebody taking over control of them and running them into walls and terrorists getting a hold of it and running down people on the sidewalk? Is that something that is important here?
It could be. So there's several different factors there, specifically on the transportation side, that there's a lot of development that's going on from the security standpoint. If everybody remembers very clearly, several of the early adopters, not to mention any names, they did have those instances happen. Some very, very, very unsafe, things have happened in the past, people hacking a car and shutting it down right in the middle of the freeway. So there are opportunities to be able to do multi-factor authentication, which is another opportunity to prevent those application side of things from being hacked. Now, the real benefit really comes, if you think about transportation, almost kind of look at it as like manufacturing and distribution, because you're actually going from point A to point B, same primitive concept. And so along the way, if you've ever ridden a shuttle from an airport to the rental car lot, a lot of times there's beacons along the road. Even though there's a driver, there's still automated messages that come over the radio. So, we're getting ready to, we'll be there in so many minutes, and different announcements along the route, because there's beacons set up along the way. So you can think of the same thing as blockchain. So as a vehicle goes from point A to point B, it could be a security thing. So if a vehicle leaves point A and it doesn't reach point B within a specific amount of time, then we can investigate the reasons why. And so then there's also to further enhance those capabilities, is there's what it's kind of built on a technology called distributed ledger. And so every time something is written to the ledger, think of like your checking account and your bank account balance on the ledger and your checkbook, You're doing the exact same thing on the internet with these sensors. So every time something changes, it's written to the ledger. And so now we can go back for accountability purposes and understand, number one, timing, and number two, potentially what the event is, depending on what type of sensor is installed.
Well, this could be a great help, I would think, to forensics and law enforcement and that sort of thing, because we got all these great records. I mean, we didn't have cell phone records until recent years, and now we have those, and this is going to be an improvement on that, I guess.
Most definitely. There's actually, just read the other day, there's a very, very small community in Switzerland that's in the process of trialing a digital identification right now that's all blockchain-based. And so what they're looking at doing is doing away with driver's license, passports, things of that nature, and everything being digitized and put onto a blockchain. So there's a lot of different use cases, especially whenever traveling from, you know, whatever location to whatever location, whether it be domestic or international, to where now with artificial intelligence, machine learning on top of blockchain, now we have the ability to take analytics from a camera, analyze those analytics, and then make a decision based off of the information that's stored in the blockchain. So everybody has a unique identity, and so that's one very key characteristic. So it's just like going to the bank and opening up an account. That's the exact same thing that happens whenever you create a wallet. You have a unique hash. There's a public side and a private side. And so on the public side, that would be the bank account, so to speak, that people write to the ledger or that you use to you know, make a transaction from one person to another.
Well, this, of course, constantly we hear people concerned about lack of privacy or the lack of individuality, and that we're all going to be kind of like walking robots ourselves as human beings, and everything is going to be all prescribed in our life. And you're talking now about getting away with, you know, no passports, but face recognition and all going into this blockchain and this sort of thing. Are there dangers or is there safeguards that need to be in place to keep our individuality?
Most definitely, and that's one of the very, very sensitive topics right now. To take that even further, is, you know, so you talked about autonomous vehicles, but there's also autonomous weapons that are being created right now by the government, and of course that's all public information that can be seen anywhere. But you know, right now it's to be able to carry. So they've got a dog robot, so to speak, that is what they're using to transport very heavy items. So, you know, like a 200-pound backpack, for instance, you know, for 10 different soldiers that are in the field. Instead of the fatigue setting in on the soldier, they're putting it all on the robot. And so it has the opportunity to be able to follow the soldiers wherever they go and make determinations based on artificial intelligence. And so there are some concerns, especially if you weaponize something like that. Now you're looking at, you know, data to make a recommendation that's typically been a human nature type of a you know, a call, so to speak.
Wow, it's just you know, talking to our mutual friend Ed Hightower a couple of weeks back. He said he ain't seen nothing yet. He said there's all these technologies that are all advancing exponentially at the same time, and he said there's going to be so many things are going to overtake us all at once, and it's going to be mind-boggling. And I can imagine that's the case. When I talk to people about the Internet of Things, and I guess Kevin Ashton at MIT is generally credited with coining the Internet of Things terminology. But they bring up these fears, these concerns about the brave new world we're in. How are we going to overcome this?
Well, I think that one thing that I always look at, and there's a great commercial that's on the TV right now by Phoenix University. And, you know, in that commercial, it shows an industrial setting where robots were taking over the day-to-day tasks. And so, you know, during that process, what you see is the lady that ends up losing her job to a robot, she goes back and reinvents herself and comes back a better person in a different organization. And I think the one thing that we have to understand as people is that we still add value anywhere and everywhere we go, because a robot can never do what a human being can, no matter what. And so the one thing that I would encourage people with through their thought processes is not to be afraid of it, but to understand how to employ it even within your own business models, because there's new revenue streams that come along with it. So if you've never been in technology before, it's easier now than ever because of all the different platforms that allow for drag and drop application building and things of that nature. So the one thing I would highly encourage people is learn a new skill set, you know, and out of that, number one, it's going to bring you a new purpose and it allows you to bring new value to the marketplace. So it's, I choose not to look at the fear side, but how do we incorporate it?
Well, that's more comforting. Thank you very much. I do appreciate that, especially with geneticists that are finding ways of having us live longer and healthier lives. And a couple of them are saying the person who's going to live to be 1,000 years old has already been born. And you say to yourself, well, if we've got all these machines doing these tasks for us, how are we going to be employed and make any money? And what's going to happen, you know, to the human race? So, yes, I think your comments there are comforting. So we've talked about some of the benefits. Do we want to go a little deeper into that? Do you have more to talk about?
Sure, we can. I would say that, you know, the a couple of the biggest benefits, and then we can kind of talk about some of the different markets of focus.
Mm-hmm.
But the biggest benefits right now is it's efficient use of resources, because everything is distributed in this type of a network. So instead of having one central server, like in the old days, whenever you had a central office go down with a telco, mm-hmm. you know, like it was a disaster because everybody was connected to that one central office. And the same thing happens within, you know, a server within an organization as well, so to speak. And so with it being decentralized and also secure, now you can have servers all around the world that are handling transactions. And so if one goes down, it's not a big deal. It's a mesh type of a topography, if you want to look at it from that, you know, from that terminology. And so, you know, efficient use of resources, and as well as cost-effective transactions too. So we're able to help with mitigating, you know, downtime, and also very, very, very secure, you know, on the data storage piece of it. You know, I would say, you know, the different types of companies that we're watching get involved, it's a wide range. And truthfully, my honest opinion, I think that any company could benefit from having a ledger of some sort. And so it doesn't mean that you store all your data on the blockchain. You can store just different characteristics about your data. And so if you just want to store somebody's name and their birthday, you can do that and keep all the heavy stuff on your cloud server. Or on your on-premise server, whatever the case may be. And so it's not like we're trying to put all of the data on the blockchain, because there's terminology called on-chain and off-chain, and I'll just kind of leave that up to the listeners to do a little research for themselves. But there's different ways to utilize this technology across a broad range of markets. And so I would say from a vertical perspective that I've seen the biggest uptake, obviously, is financial. That's the one that we always hear about. Because we hear Bitcoin and Ethereum almost daily now. But there's lots of other applications that are taking place on the financial side of things. Another big one, and this is where it gets really interesting, is with healthcare. And so MIT kicked off a project a while back that has really gained some legs in different places. There's always, you know, what they call an ICO, or an initial coin offering. So it's kind of like the initial public offering, but on the cryptocurrency side. So if you start looking for initial coin offerings, you're going to see all these new businesses that are able to finance their startups in a different way. And so healthcare being a big piece of this.
If you just tuned in, we've been visiting with technology consultant Kurt Kelly, who's been explaining to us all the intricacies of the Internet of Things. And we want to know more about blockchain and how it's changing the Internet of Things and who is going to be using it. But we got a break now for the half hour, and we will be right back. If you've just tuned in, you're listening to the Science News Radio Network special presentation, Promise of Tomorrow, with Colonel Mason. Those of you listening on radio can also hear us commercial-free online anytime, webcast at promiseoftomorrow.biz. Okay, as we walk to the break at the half hour. We're going to pause at the door of the Den of Strangers, where we keep locked away all of the wisdom of mankind. Who in the Den of Strangers will we meet today?
Yes, of course, George Bernard Shaw. Two things define you. Your patience when you have nothing, and your attitude when you have everything.